We're back with Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Tomorrow evening, the Milwaukee/Chicago-based Great Lakes Baroque Ensemble opens its third season with a program that focuses on the music of the late French Baroque period. Music for the Last Queen showcases French composers of the late 18th century, just prior to the French Revolution.
Ensemble founder and harpsichordist Jory Vinokur met me and our recording engineer Jason Reavy just north of Milwaukee. Jory, it is so great to see you again. Thank you so much for having us up here.
Bonnie, I'm so delighted to see you. And when you say up here, we are speaking of the home of my incredible and unique friend, Brian Gore, over in Grafton, Wisconsin. And in his beautiful orangerie, we see lemon trees and all sorts of wonderful
things. Even though
things
it's
here.
A gray kind of chilly fall yes. day, it is lovely and warm in here. And there are two harpsichords in yes. here that he built.
Mr. Gore, who is a very, very well-known and well-respected architect and landscape architect, built harpsichords way back in the day. We have two concert instruments in this orangerie and two other instruments that he built elsewhere on the property.
Well, what is the concert that is going to happen this weekend?
This is a very, very special event, and Philippe Leroy, who, along with me, is the artistic mind, if you want to call it that, behind Great Lakes Baroque, long wanted to explore the music that happened at the very end of the last real regime, the music under Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, and he calls the program Music for the Last Queen. And this is not accidental, although I think many Americans imagine Marie Antoinette as only being extraordinary, frivolous, or associating her with the phrase, let them eat cake, which is probably, it was never said and is quoted out of context, even when it is said. Marie Antoinette was very, very cultivated. And upon her arrival to the French court in 1770, she immediately became very passionate about music. She was already a bit trained. She studied several instruments herself, harpsichord, the fortepiano. She played the harp very decently as well, and sang, and composed. So a real music lover. We know that under her reign, certain composers who remain famous today, like Christoph Willibald Gluck, were much supported by her. So his successes at the Paris Opera can be partially ascribed to Marie Antoinette. But she also had a number of other composers, fascinating individuals, who are mostly neglected and forgotten today.
Even in France.
And Philippe, instead of concentrating on composers who haven't been entirely abandoned, Gluck being foremost among these, he wanted to explore great composers, and they are great composers, who are too much forgotten, and unjustly so.
So musically, what was happening in Europe at this time? In 1770, when Marie Antoinette came to Paris, that was kind of a shift in music.
It is a shift. Because if we're thinking of the greatest period of French music, and in my very biased fashion, as I'm, of course, principally a harpsichordist, I tend to associate this with the harpsichord players. So if we were to look at Louis XIV's reign, it would be very difficult not to speak of François Couperin, who we call Le Grand, the Great. And François Couperin wrote 27 very important suites for harpsichord, some of these very, very long, and that is actually much more keyboard music than was published by Bach himself, for instance. Couperin gave way, if you will, to Jean-Philippe Rameau. They overlapped. Rameau died in 1763 or 4 and was mostly composing opera and orchestra works at the end. So if we achieve a kind of acme of complexity and very, very ornamental music, what had to happen next was a return to classicism, thus the classical period. Things become simpler, more melodic. And yet at the same time, the French insist upon remaining French. And so many of these composers, while giving us more accessible melodic things, can't resist the ornamental style or very, very daring harmonic modulations.
As we're talking about this, I'm thinking, is this what we would call Rococo in architecture? That kind of
yes.
lots of ornamentation?
I think that is not an unfair thing. And of course, I remind myself, I remind our listeners, that there is no clearly defined cutoff in any period. We do occasionally say that the beginning of the Baroque period in music is Italian opera in about 1600, almost precisely. That gives us a very, very clear guideline for the beginning of Baroque music. The end of Baroque, beginning of Classicism, well, what can I say? These overlap terribly. Rococo, we're looking at style over substance to a large extent. And I don't think that would be entirely unfair to claim that about much of the music of the period. And yet it would be so unfair to just throw it all into the same box under that heading.
And just say it's nothing but frill and...
Exactly. Yeah. And there is a lot of it. And Philippe points out that of certain composers, many of the pieces are very frilly. And then at times, the composers will nonetheless want to explore more, want to show off their real art and not just to entertain.
We're sitting in front of this beautiful instrument that you're going to play a full piece on in just a moment, but I'm hoping you can give me maybe some examples of, we're talking about ornamentation, what it might sound like a Couperin-style ornamentation versus a later, what the differences might sound like.
Of course, right under the gun.
Yes. no pressure at all.
none whatsoever. So if I were to play a few measures of what I can recall right off the top of my head, say of François Couperin's Les Amusements, the amusements, from his seventh order, we're going to have a melody filled. Every note has something, so... etc. That was more or less it. But we can hear that very simple melody. That's it. But Couperin gives us an ornament on just about every single note. So that is one aspect of French music, and Couperin can occasionally choose to exaggerate that for expressive or colorful reasons.
And did Rameau do similar types of things?
And Rameau, for instance, one of the more beautiful solo pieces of Rameau, L'Entretien des Muses, the meeting of the muses. We can hear mixed into that beautiful texture a number of little trills, mordants, so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the piece we are going to hear in full. This takes us from Couperin through Rameau to...
This kind of last gasp of French harpsichord music. So Philippe has introduced me to a composer who had the rather amusing name of Simon, which would be Simon. He was a music master at the court of Louis XV and what we would call intendant de musique, if I'm not mistaken, pour les enfants de France. So les enfants de France is referring basically to the crown prince, princess, all the royal, not only children, enfants, but any royal family members. So he would have been the main music teacher to the court. He remained very much in favor with Marie Antoinette. We know that she had various scores of his in her personal little bookshelf. So we're not speaking of her major library. I mean, very near to her own instrument. She kept these near and dear to her heart. Something that has only occurred to us very recently was that Simon probably had something resembling a sense of humor about his double name, and many of his pieces carry repeated syllables. So what I'm going to play today, the proper noun would be Arard, A-R-R-A-R-D, who is a person, we don't know who this is referring to, but when you say the name completely, it's La-La-Rare, so La-La. Another concerto, La Fon. So this is deliberate. Other composers would very studiously avoid repeated syllables. So he seemed to take this as a little bit of a joke. The piece, however, is not jokey at all. It's a rather passionate piece. So not quite as fluffy, if you will, as many other pieces of this time. And for the music lovers out there, listen to the influence of Jean-Philippe Rameau on this. So very theatrical, very brilliant, still incorporating a bit of this very ornamented style, but just a bit. And I would also ask everybody to listen to how far from our home key of G minor, how far Simon is willing to go. We end up in A flat minor at a time. And again, for music students, music lovers, remember that in the Baroque time where we don't have a perfectly equal temperament, despite the well-tempered clavier of Bach, this is another story. We are still treating A flat minor as something which would be very strange indeed, and how to get there is quite a journey.
The Great Lakes Baroque.
This is year three.
And how has it been going?
So it's been, you know, a very interesting process. I think like all small arts organizations, there's a learning curve. Things are changing, becoming interesting. We have, among other extraordinary projects, we have a collaboration with Florentine Opera, thanks to director William Florescue. I will be conducting John Blow's Venus and Adonis alongside Purcell's immortal Dido and Aeneas at the end of January at the Marcus Center. And this is a collaboration with Great Lakes Baroque. So for the first time in Florentine's history, we have a period instrument band. That's to say, players specialized in Baroque violin, cello, theorbo, myself leading from the harpsichord. So, of course, Great Lakes Baroque is pretty darn thrilled.
Drury, it is always such a pleasure to see you.
Oh, Bonnie, for me as well.
Pleasure to hear you play. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming over here. And thank you, Jason, our engineer.
Great Lakes Baroque will perform Music for the Last Queen tomorrow evening at the North Shore Congregational Church in Fox Point. Harpsichordist Jory Vinokur founded the ensemble and will be among the performers.
Special thanks to engineer Jason Reavy for the field recording and to architect Brian Gore for hosting us and for the use of his harpsichord. There are photos from our session at WUWM.com.